From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Later tonight, yep, those open lines. But here's what's happening. The commander of the U.S. Cyber Command says that he does not favor giving the United Nations the power to regulate the Internet. Some regulations are needed to protect critical networks that control electrical power, banking, transportation, and other key elements of society, according to Army General Keith Alexander, who's also the director of the National Security Agency. He said this in a speech at a security conference, but asked whether the UN should have the regulation role over the Internet. He said, no, I'm really not in favor of that. Further research has now been published suggesting that there is no link between mobile phones and brain cancer. The risk mobiles present has been much debated over the past 20 years as the use of cell phones has soared. The latest study by the Institute of Cancer Epidemiology in Denmark looked at more than 350,000 people with mobile phones over an 18-year period. The researchers concluded that the users were at no greater risk than anyone else of developing brain cancer. Award-winning journalist William Thomas with us. He specializes in news that the mainstream just doesn't report on. William, what do you think of this study?
I don't think much of it, George. In fact, after taking a long look at it this afternoon, I call this kind of misleading science by headline negligent homicide. These are the words of Cindy Sage. She's the co-author of the biggest scientific meta-analysis ever done. And she looked at more than 2,000 scientific studies showing the dangers of wireless radiation. So when she says that this kind of sham study is negligent homicide, I tend to agree.
All right. And do we know who put this study together, Will? Who financed it, by any chance?
Yeah, we do. And that's a real problem. This third Danish study is not the biggest. They issued a similar study in 2006 that looked at more than 400,000 subscribers. Now, they are matching cell phone subscribers with cancer statistics from the Danish government database. So in 2006, they came out and said, oh, no link between cancers and cell phones. And in 2001, their original study said the same thing. The problem is that, as you say, is their funding. That's one of the biggest issues here. Now, the original study, we later learned it was funded through the Danish Cancer Society, okay, yep, by the two biggest cellular companies in Denmark. Teledenmark and Sonofone paid 1 million kroners to assure industry-friendly results. And just like this latest spin, all three Danish studies that have gotten these worldwide headlines omitted the heaviest users, that is, more than 200,000 corporate subscribers were omitted from the study, and the most vulnerable population, children, were also eliminated from all three studies. So I would have to say that if you take out the heaviest users and the most vulnerable users, totaling in the hundreds of thousands, you have a very much invalid study. You have a flawed study here. I wouldn't touch this Danish pastry, George, with a 500-foot pole.
All right. Well, thanks so much for that update. You just got to be careful who does the studies, who finances the studies. My recommendation, go hands-free with your phone as often as you can. Regulators on Friday closed two banks in Georgia, one each in Florida and Colorado, raising to 84 now the number of U.S. banks that have failed this year. The number of closures has fallen sharply this year as banks have worked out ways through which their bad debt that's been accumulated in the recessions, how they're easing things. By the same time last year, regulators had shuttered 139 banks. More than 8 million Americans thought seriously about killing themselves in the previous year, according to a new government survey. More adults who considered suicide lived in the Midwest and the West than in other parts of the country. The findings were reported by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. German scientists say they expect pieces of a defunct satellite hurtling toward the atmosphere to hit the planet this weekend. Parts of the minivan-sized satellite will burn up during re-entry, but up to 30 fragments, they think, weighing a total of 1.87 tons, could crash into the Earth with a speed of up to 280 miles an hour. The satellite orbits the Earth every 90 minutes, and scientists can only say that it could hit the Earth anywhere along its path between 53 degrees north and 53 degrees south, a vast swath of territory that includes much of the planet outside of the poles. Who's watching this for us? None other than our science advisor and head of the EnterpriseMission.com, Richard C. Hoagland. We're going to dodge this one, Richard?
I certainly think so. I mean, look, here we go again. Instead of a 6.5-ton satellite, we're now down to 2.7 tons. About 1.7 is supposed to come in. The biggest chunk is that big ceramic mirror that was supercooled, you know, to be used for the, actually it was actually shaped in a conical form to collect the X-rays. What's interesting is to watch the odds. Remember the odds on the URs was like
1 in 3,200.
1 in 3,200. And its orbit was up to 57 north and 57 south. It reached a lot more territory.
All right.
And this one is at 53 north and south because the orbits are symmetrical above and below the equator. But the odds are higher. Remember, when the numbers go down, the odds of getting hit go up. So 1 in 3,200 versus 1 in 2,000. What's the difference? It's making more orbits over more populated regions closer to the temperate and equatorial zones. See how this works?
Well, we're going to find out on this one any day now. Now, isn't there another object coming by in November that's pretty close?
See, this is what I'm really interested in. I think all this stuff about entering satellites is mere fear porn to get people really kind of primed to be scared to death of things falling from the sky. What I'm looking at with some of my colleagues now is what I laid out at the Awake and Aware presentation a couple, 3 weeks ago in Irvine, California. It's an object called YU-55. It's supposedly an asteroid. We've got Arecibo radar images which show that it's a weird asteroid. It's only about 1,400 feet across. I mean, that sounds small, but it's really huge for something like this. It's coming within 200,000 miles, 85% of the distance to the moon, on the night of November 8th and 9th, and it will safely pass by, we are told. However, there's something really weird. For one thing, it's spherical. It should not be spherical, George. These things should be splinters because they're bashed and battered by 4.5 billion years of meteorite strikes.
Yeah, that's true.
This thing is almost as spherical as a beach ball, and sitting down, it's rotating once every 19.5 hours.
Here we go. By the way, you did a great job at Awake and Aware, and I do believe they have clips of you at awakeandaware2011.com, correct?
Super. And also IndigoTVPlatforms.com.
Okay, and one quick question here before I let you go. Is Robin going to New York? She was going to cover the Occupy Wall Street.
Robin's going to cover, to participate in the demonstrations, to talk with a whole lot of people, to network with all these interesting people who are coming out and want a change of fundamental values and social structure and economics and everything that we desperately need. And also to provide medical advice in case the New York Police Department do something really dumb and stupid like they've done in the past. Did you see that video that's making the rounds of the Iraq veteran and the look on the faces of those cops when he said, there's no honor in beating up U.S. citizens. There is no honor. The consciousness raising that I've been talking about vis-a-vis Elanine is taking place all over the planet. And Robin's going to be front and center next weekend in New York City. So if anybody wants to help, collaborate, keep her safe, by all means, get in touch with her at her Facebook page.
All right, you got it. Thanks, Richard. Richard C. Hoagland, whose website, of course, EnterpriseMission.com, and he has a Facebook page, too. So do we. Everybody does, I think. Well, the Rapture Day, it's supposed to be Friday, today. How many people have left the planet? An evangelical broadcaster whose end-of-the-world prophecy earlier this year stirred a global media frenzy apparently has vanished from the public eye. I don't think he was taken. He's just gone somewhere. He said that today was the new judgment day. And following the month, Harold Camping, the 90-year-old former civil engineer, was said by his California-based Christian radio network to have suffered a stroke some time ago that left him hospitalized, but others say he's doing okay. He has largely dropped out of sight since then, and his daily radio program, Open Forum, broadcast on more than 60 U.S. radio stations, has been canceled. During Open Lines, those of you who have not been taken, this is not a slight against religion by any means, but I want to talk with you and feel, you know, get your take on how you feel that you weren't taken. Anyways, we'll be back in a moment. We're going to talk about some crypto stories, creatures, with Linda Godfrey on Coast to Coast AM. And, you know, I'm going to dedicate tonight's program to a dear friend of ours, Bob Crane from the C. Crane Company, because this guy works around the clock to bring you quality products for emergencies, for comfort, and for entertainment. The C. Crane Company puts the greatest radios together on the planet. One, of course, is the CC Solar Observer from C. Crane. It is perhaps the best emergency radio. It's only $49.95. It'll make a great gift. It's also superb for you. It's an AM/FM weather radio. It's got the solar panel to keep it powered up, or a crank, or a couple AA batteries. And it also has the built-in flashlight as well. So take advantage of that. That's the CC Solar Observer. I think they've got about 500 left. Get them for the holidays. Here's their phone number. Mention my name, 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863. You can also go to their website, look at the CC Radio 2. Every house should have one. Those are permanent radios. You keep them in your house. You can travel with them if you want because they have batteries too. But I just love the thing in the house. The CC Radio EP, the SW Pocket, just go to their website. Take a look, ccradio.com. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Linda Godfrey with us for a couple hours, one of the most respected authorities on anomalous animals and paranormal phenomenon in Wisconsin and all over the place. As a journalist, she was the first to break the story of a very terrifying wolf-like monstrosity lurking in the shadows, shrouded forests surrounding Elkhorn, Wisconsin's Bray Road area. Godfrey has continued to pursue her interest in the unknown and has gone on to investigate just an array of unusual animals lurking in her home state. Hey, Linda, welcome back. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you, George?
Good to have you. And, of course, your books, The Michigan Dogman, The Beast of Bray Road, great things. What's going on in the world of crypto these days?
Well, you know, just when I think that I've heard every encounter there is here, that all the weird animals have been seen, there's nothing more to be learned, something new always comes up. And I have had a really interesting report that I've been working with the people on.
All right, share it with us.
It happened in Maine, not Wisconsin, not Michigan. This is something that I keep trying to emphasize, is that these encounters and sightings go on all over the United States and other countries. But this was, I think, my first one that I've had from Maine. And it came from a middle-aged couple, professional people, both of them, who were renting a very nice, lovely farmhouse in the country near a small town in Maine.
Okay.
And they had the habit of sitting out on their front porch and drinking coffee late at night. And they had a little pond on the property, and a lot of deer used to come through there. And so they kept a floodlight with them, and every once in a while they'd shine it on the yard to see if there were any deer there.
Sounds gorgeous, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, just idyllic. And they were doing this, it was actually Labor Day weekend, just a couple of years ago, and it was foggy, so they didn't have a very good view of the yard, but they were sitting there drinking their coffee, and all of a sudden the husband got this sense that something was wrong, and he told his wife to go in the house. And instead of going in the house, she also felt something was wrong, and she shined that big floodlight onto the yard. And there, coming at them, barely 20 feet away from them in the yard, were three upright, wolf-like creatures on their hind legs,
mm-hmm.
advancing stealthily toward them, their eyes lit up, blazing brilliantly from the flashlight.
Now, wait a minute. You said on their hind legs, like walking like a human?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, not exactly like a human, because canines walk on their toe pads.
Okay.
Whereas humans walk flat-footed. but they were walking upright, just a little bit hunched over at the neck, which is the usual description because canines aren't conformed to walk, you know, really fully erect. And so people usually will say that. And these were no exception. They had pointed ears, canine-like muzzles, a little different looking than some of the descriptions because there were some additional details such as that the eyes were set kind of far apart and there was a wider bridge between of the muzzle, the upper muzzle, than is usually described. They had a very close and good look at them. Well, they're out there, and the man has guns, but they're locked in his garage, and he would have to go past the creatures to get them. So they were kind of frozen in position, and when the floodlights hit these three animals, they kind of sidled off toward the side of the house, and then two more came into view. There were a total of five of these creatures, and the man and the wife realized that they were at least 7 feet tall because they passed in front of a shed door that they knew the height of, you know, so they had something to compare it to.
Sure.
So you've got 5 7-foot dog men, and they had never heard of dog men. You know, Maine is not known for werewolf sightings or anything like that. They just had no clue what they were even looking at except that things were stalking them in the dark and in the fog. So they went in the house, and they went up to their second-story bedroom where their teenage daughter was sleeping and looked out the window, and all five of them were down below looking up at them, and they were able to shine their flashlight. They tried taking pictures, but nothing showed up because they were too far away in the dark. The flash didn't work, you know, at that distance. They called 911. 911 told them to call a game warden, so they found a game warden, called him up. He said, just stay in your house and lock the doors. Well, they had already had a good enough look at the musculature of these creatures to know that they could probably enter the house if they wanted to by force.
Help
you know, so that wasn't very consoling. Needless to say, they did not get much sleep that night. The creatures were gone by morning. They did find footprints, but they were just too unglued to really even, you know, record them. People who have first-time encounters with this type of creature, I mean, just imagine it. You have no idea that anything like this exists, and then you're stalked all night long by these creatures. They've drawn separate witness sketches for me, the wife and the husband, and they match up very well. They drew diagrams of the yard. I've been able to research and confirm all the details of the environment via Google Earth and other things. I've checked them out personally. They check out.
What do you think these creatures are, Linda?
Well, I think that they are the same things people are seeing in Wisconsin, Michigan, California, and other states.
The dogman.
The dogman. They are upright dog or wolf-like creatures. And why they walk upright, I don't know. If they're natural animals, I've been consulting with, our state's top wolf expert. I've written places. I've consulted with the professor who studies the wolves on Isle Royale. Read everything I can get my hands on, and I can't find any instance why normal natural wolves would walk upright. The experts all claim that they don't in the wild, and yet they can. Any canine can walk upright. You know, I don't know if anybody has ever seen the Marenghi dancing dog on YouTube.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We've seen that.
Yeah, it's terrific. I mean, yeah. they can do it. It's not like you're seeing dogs that are flying or, you know, turning green. Although there are a few really strange ones. I'll admit a small percentage have some paranormal features to them, but most do not. And these weren't really doing anything other than the strange stalking behavior and the walking upright. They were still upright, you know, as they watched them down below. And the couple felt that at one point, it seemed like there was a pup being carried on its mother's back. They weren't really sure. It was hard to make out the details.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
It really is. Now, did they feel at any point threatened or that these creatures were going to attack them?
Yeah, they felt that they were the targets of these creatures and that the creatures wanted to get at them, but that while they were in the house, somehow they couldn't, although they were certainly still aware. You know, they felt that the creatures were aware that they were up there, and that they could have if they wanted to. And they were really, really scared, you know, and the guy was really wishing that his guns were not locked outdoors in the garage.
Gosh, Linda, this is an incredible story. It really, yeah. really is. If people want more information on this, can they get it from your website? Do you have anything posted yet?
I have not posted that one. It's going to be in a new book that I just finished earlier this month. It's going to be printed by Penguin Books.
Sure. Okay. Well, sounds like we're going to get you back on for that.
Yes, definitely. It'll be this coming summer when they have that out. It's called Real Wolfmen, True Encounters in Modern America, and it has quite a bit of astonishing new material.
All right, Linda, when we come back, I want to get your take on some Bigfoot sightings that are going around specifically in Wisconsin, and also get your take on what has happened in Siberia, where some Canadian scientists who were invited to go out there claim to have found some incredible things. And we'll talk about that in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with Linda Godfrey as we talk about crypto things on Coast to Coast AM. You could be a Coast Insider for less than 25 cents a month. Join the club like so many are. And a matter of fact, my goal is 2,000 new members every month until the end of time, and we're well on our way to reaching that one for October. So jump on board. Just simply go to coasttocoastam.com. Trust me, you will like it. Right at the top, it says Coast Insiders, and you can sign up and join. And again, it's a little less than 25 cents a month. Next hour, we'll take phone calls with Linda Godfrey as we talk about all things crypto. And when we come right back, let's talk about some multiple Bigfoot sightings in Wisconsin. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We've got Linda Godfrey with us, one of the most respected authorities on paranormal phenomenon and anomalous animals and creatures, and you name it, she'll find it. Let's go to her now. Linda, in Siberia, Canadian scientists were invited out there, and Bigfoot searchers, they think they found some hair. They think they found some strange prints of what they call the Yeti, the abominable snowman. Have you followed this story yet? Anything new?
I haven't been able to follow it as closely as I'd like because I'm in the middle of conference and appearance seasons, and I've been at libraries and conferences kind of nonstop. But I've been watching it with interest and kind of waiting for that definitive conclusion to come out. It seems like some of the things I've seen have been conflicting. So I haven't been quite sure what to make of it yet. I think it's a little early to pronounce it.
Okay. True. What about these multiple sightings going on in Wisconsin?
Well, this is something that I can study up close. I had a book that came out in July of this year called Monsters of Wisconsin, in which I was able to gather together a lot of Bigfoot sightings from around the state because I have a Bigfoot chapter. And I was actually kind of astonished myself to see how many there are in the state of Wisconsin. But even more interesting, I mean, people sort of take it for granted that, well, sure, the northern forests of Wisconsin, lots of dense underbrush, millions of acres, that seems like a normal place where you'd find Bigfoot. Well, I have found between 1964 and just several weeks ago a total of 13 or 14 different pretty well-documented, credible sightings just within a small area around Walworth County, just west of Walworth County. This is the northwestern side of Walworth County.
Okay.
Eastern Rock County and southern Jefferson County, really a rather small area, all kind of leading out of the Kettle Moraine State Forest. And many of them are in daytime. Several are by two people. A lot of times they had very good looks at them. These are not just fleeting glimpses in most cases. And several of them are in the area where I call the beast the Lima Marsh Monster, because they're around a very large wild marsh area. It used to be known for duck hunting, called the Lima Marsh Nature Refuge. And you look at it and you think, well, anything really could be out there. It's just as people don't go in it unless they're wearing waders, and it's a very, very mucky swamp. But a few years ago, I had two sightings within a month of each other, totally unrelated and unknown to one another. One was student driving home late at night who saw a very Bigfoot-like creature running across Highway 59. And then only a month later, a middle-aged restaurant owner and his wife both saw at dusk, it was not dark, what they described as could only have been a Bigfoot crossing the road in front of them near the Lima Marsh. And then I had another report just a few weeks ago that actually occurred September 4th of this year, where a woman was out digging in her garden in the same area with the area very well lit by huge yard lights at 10:30 at night, when she heard this growl that she said felt so close that it vibrated so much that she felt whatever it was right behind her. She turned around, and standing about 50 feet away in the weeds, by my best measurement when I went out there to investigate, was this thing that she said had to have been 8 feet tall, because it was, she knew how much of her kids' heads stuck above the weeds when they went out and stood there, and this thing was way up above it. And she knew there was nothing there for it to stand on. And she was so frightened, she turned around and tried to pretend she hadn't seen it, and it growled again. And she turned around and looked at it again and saw its eyes, described the shaped head. She drew a picture for me. It's just the perfect outline of a Bigfoot. And she said she hadn't thought of it before, but last winter she kept seeing these huge footprints coming from a cornfield and to her house and back, and was trying to figure out whether her son was trying to sneak out of his bedroom wearing human footprint-shaped huge snowshoes. And then she realized that, again, she was kind of trying to rationalize it. She asked her son about it. He said, "Well, Mom, I'm 21. Why would I go out my window? I can go out the front door and drive the car away.
He'd leave anytime he wants."
Yeah, exactly. And he didn't even have snowshoes. Since then, a woman who has been very instrumental in uncovering this, and I have actually taken a casting of what really looks like a Bigfoot print. There was one very good print in a sandy kind of a construction area near the house. It wasn't ideal casting material, you know, so you couldn't get dermal ridges or anything like that. You need pretty fine soil or clay or silt to get a really nice cast. This had some shredded mulch and, you know, plant material and that kind of thing. But it's about a 20-inch long print, 13 inches wide, classic shape, and there seemed to be, there was one soft spot where this imprint was made, and then there are other partial, what looked like partial toe prints and things like that, that weren't deep enough to be cast or, you know, that you really couldn't tell for sure what they were. But we have an ongoing investigation into this, and the people are cooperating very well with it. Just seems amazing to me that there are this many sightings in really a rather populated area of southeastern Wisconsin.
Well, that's true. Now, let me ask you this, Linda, because you've investigated these creatures for a long time and these stories. What does your gut tell you? What do you think's happening? What are they?
Well, the longer I investigate these things, although, you know, I'm loath to say I know for sure what it is one way or the other, because until I see one, I feel I really can't say that, but I'm really starting to, you know, look back to John Keel's idea of the window areas, the trans-dimensional portals, that maybe these things are coming from somewhere else, or else that they're some sort of manifestation of a type of land spirit, that some kind of living consciousness that can interact with the human mind somehow.
Interesting.
Manifest or show itself to us.
How far off would I be, Linda, if I said, I think that they are physical creatures, that they could be what is the missing link that we've heard so much about between man and ape, and that they just haven't really been found. There just aren't that many of them around this planet.
Well,
possible?
I think that's also very, very plausible, because they do leave footprints. They're seen chasing and holding deer and other animals, so they obviously need to eat. You know, I think that they're probably very intelligent, from what people say, and they would have to be in order to elude. And I don't think the populations are large, but I think that they have to move around so much to find enough food that it puts them more at risk of being seen. And that probably is why it may only be one small family in this area that's habitated there since the 60s and just has to move around in order to find enough deer and other game to feed itself. So I can totally see that view.
What is the story of the Canadian hiker? What did he encounter?
Well, here we're going back to the Dogman, and this was pretty interesting. This was also very recent. I just had this report about 2 months ago. And this happened over near Alberta in a popular recreation area called Mount Baldy.
Know it, yeah.
And this hiker was equipped with both a gun and a camera, and he was walking along a trail when he suddenly came face-to-face with an upright Dogman at a fairly close distance. It was kind of hanging back in the trees a little bit, but it was there right in front of him, and he could see it very plainly. He stopped. The wolfman or dogman or man-wolf, whatever you want to call it, just stood there on its hind legs staring at him. He raised his gun. The thing looked as if it were acknowledging that he had a gun. You know, it sort of followed it with its eyes, looked at him, but didn't move, did not budge. And he thought, well, it doesn't seem like it's coming after me. So he tried raising his camera. At that, the creature appeared surprised, is what he said, and then turned around and ran off into the woods, still on its hind legs.
Weird. It knew the difference between a gun and a camera, and it seemed to be more scared, frightened of a camera.
Camera shy. Yeah, and in a way, in a strange way, this tallies with the uncanny ability that both Bigfoot and Dogman seem to have for eluding trail cams. You know, mountain lions are among the most elusive wild creatures that we know, and yet they regularly get caught on trail cams.
Sure.
Bears. If there's a bear in your backyard, it'll hang around. It'll go by the trash can. It may climb a tree. Usually you can get pictures of it. This is in the newspapers all the time. These creatures, people see them by the hundreds, but they just don't ever show up in pictures. And the people who do try to shoot at them, the creatures either act nonchalant or they run. But either way, people who've told me they're sure that they hit them point blank, did not see any blood, did not see the creature fall, did not appear to have injured it in any way. So I don't know what that means. You know, they don't behave in these ways like the natural animals do.
Well, it sounds like they have a little higher intelligence than most animals.
They do seem
they to reason. Yes. You know, they reason.
Yeah, and a greater awareness of humans and human artifacts, such as guns, houses, barns, you know, the idea of this recent Bigfoot sighting where it was obviously it was coming from a cornfield and coming up and staring into their house. I hear that about dogmen all the time, where people will either be in the house and they'll look and they'll see this wolf-like or dog-like face staring in at them, and it's high enough off the ground that they realize it has to be 7 or 8 feet tall. The same thing with the Bigfoot, maybe not quite as often, but with the Dogman, it's almost uncanny. I had one incident in Illinois where a middle-aged couple, actually more of like an elderly couple, were awakened one night just because everything seemed to go silent. And it was just odd. It woke them up. And they looked out their front window and saw four upright Dogmen walking down their street. They watched them just silently walk on their hind legs, but you know, human-like except they're on dog legs, toward a certain house that was on kind of a rise or a little hill at the end of the street. They climbed around the house. They looked in the windows. One of them went up on the roof. They just sort of swarmed it. And then they all came down and walked off toward a wild area or a golf course, something like this. This was just east of St. Louis, I believe.
Not too far from where we are right now. Not far.
Right. And many of these are not. And these things, I mean, if they can be in a populated area like southeastern Wisconsin, they can be anywhere.
I had an opportunity to meet one of our guests, Ken Gearhart, a cryptozoologist. He was in Pensacola with me and a number of other people at a speaking event last weekend, Linda. And we were just talking about Bigfoot cases and searches and stuff. Do you feel as if we're getting more or less Bigfoot sightings in this country or in North America?
Well, for myself, I feel that it's being seen more, myself personally.
Okay.
I think that there are people who are really reluctant to report it. I think that huge numbers of sightings are just kept confidential because, especially when there are, some of these crazy hoaxes that come out, people are afraid to get involved. They don't want to be accused of hoaxing, or they don't want to be, made fun of by people. So I'm really seeing more myself. I think perhaps overall there would be a lot more if people didn't have this personal fear factor. And sometimes people are just in denial, too. They don't really want to admit it even to themselves that they saw it, because then they have to admit that there are things we don't know.
Well, that's true. There's no question about it. Any reports of these Thunderbirds, Linda? Big birds?
Well, the term Thunderbird, it's kind of loosely applied to any overly large flying bird. And I've heard it applied to both things that really look bird-like, with big feathers, except they're just extremely large. And then to things that look like they're pterosaurs, from the Cretaceous period, millions of years ago, with more leathery wings and the long beak, that sort of thing. I had a report over Green Bay, Wisconsin, where a group of young people and then one of their mother, whoever's house they were at, saw what looked like a typical pterosaur. Some people might think of them as a pterodactyl, which is a type of that. These were animals that could get a 40-foot wingspan, although they're supposed to be extinct. But this, what they called it, a dragon. They didn't know what else to call it. They said it was tan and white. It was low enough that the streetlights reflected off of its scales. And they all saw it waft over them, flying fairly fast and close enough that they could get a pretty good look at it. They all decided they'd had a mass hallucination and that they were crazy. And then it came back again, and they had a second look at it. So then they went in and got the mother, and she came out and watched for a while and finally said, "Well, I'm going into bed. There's no such holy blank, 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 blank," because it went over a third time. And
that's got to be frightening to see that.
Yeah, when these big things are in the sky. And then you get the flying furry things like the man bat of La Crosse, that happened in fall of 2006 when two men saw this 10-foot wingspan thing fly at the windshield of their truck, and it made such a loud shriek that they both got physically ill from it, the sound waves or whatever did it. So there are all these big, strange things flying around. And that one, by the way, was corroborated by several other sightings in the area, unrelated, unknown to one another, before the publicity. And these Mothman-like things. I have several reports that people have called huge owls that I haven't even really... Things have just been coming in that I can barely even get to all of them.
How tall are they?
Pardon?
How tall are the owls?
Well, they're usually seen flying, and they're usually described as having like an 8 to 10-foot wingspan.
That's pretty big, Linda.
Yeah, that's bigger than your average, hoot owl or even gray horned owl. So it seems to me that there are more things out there in a wider variety than many people even imagine.
Of everything you've investigated, which case for you is one of the most baffling?
The most baffling?
Yeah.
Wow, that's hard to say because they're all sort of baffling.
They're all baffling, aren't they?
Because you just don't know really for sure what they are. And I keep researching these. Well, I guess one of them would be this recurring theme that seems to come about. This is the big variation on the canine sightings, I call them the home invaders or the bedroom intruders. And I've got a number of very intelligent, credible people who, while they're awake, see large, dark-colored, canine-like creatures that many of them liken to the Egyptian god of the underworld, Anubis, in their bedroom.
Right, right.
And one man saw, not in his bedroom, it was broad daylight. He was walking from his room to the bathroom, was in the bathroom, came out of the bathroom, and this thing was in the hallway looking at him in broad daylight, bright sunlight. He went to hit it with a baseball bat, and it looked surprised, looked to its side, and then just vanished. I have a woman who has several advanced degrees, who is a professor at a university, not in Wisconsin, who saw two of them appear in her room. One went and walked around the room, looked at things while the other one watched her, and then they just went somewhere, disappeared.
You're getting people with some credible evidence there, Linda. We're going to take phone calls with Linda Godfrey as we talk about crypto creatures on Coast to Coast AM.